On this week's Bet the Process podcast, Rufus and I do a pseudo mailbag episode. We recap Sloan and we go into some serious golf nerddom around who you would pick over for the next 5 years to win a major. And so with that, let's start the process.
Bet the process. Bet the process. Welcome to the podcast. Bet the process. It's not the typical cookie cutter nonsense. If you came just for picks, you're in the wrong place. Find a tout with the narrative to make a strong case. Instead of blindly assuming a team must be tanking, we're looking for the edge in Massey Peabody rankings. Crunching all the numbers in a simulated system that break down the data, analytically driven. Media coverage of sports gambling is pathetic. The bottom.
Welcome to another episode of the Bet the Process podcast, where Rufus is frazzled because he forgot about daylight savings or didn't know how to program daylight savings into his golf numbers. And now it looks like he's flicking me off because he's taking something eye goop out of his eye with his middle finger. Was that a subtle thing to flip me off or not?
I didn't mean to flip you off.
So it was very subtle. It was so subtle that you didn't realize you were doing it.
It was completely subconscious.
Self-conscious or subconscious?
Both.
It was. Yeah, I don't know. Actually. Okay. So I saw you at Sloan. The last thing I saw you, we were at a casino in Boston, and then you just vanished into thin air like Kaiser Soze. How was your Sloan? Obviously, you had an interesting Sloan because you didn't go to the conference at all, and we tried to get you onto a panel, but that didn't work very well. You almost ghosted us for a dinner where I invited someone from the PGA Tour to come meet you. How was your Sloan?
It was good, Jeff. There's always so many people that I want to see in so little time, it feels like.
And I feel like you and I didn't even get a chance to talk at all. Like, no. I was excited to see you, but we didn't get a chance to talk.
Well, luckily we gotten a chance to talk, what, a week before? Was it a week before?
Oh, that's true. You were at my house. I forgot about that.
I mean, so it was my first year not actually going to the Sloan Conference itself, but in, I think last year when I went to maybe a half of a panel total. So it's the value definitely isn't in the conference for me. It's more in just seeing people. And I'm not sure what value actually it has professionally. It's just nice to catch up with a lot of people that I've known for a long time.
Did you manage to see all those people, even though you didn't go to, I mean, what percentage of those people actually go to the conference? None of them do?
I don't know. I mean, a lot of the sports bettors don't now. I mean, like guys like Ed Fang, Spanky, Mike Craig, I don't think they went to the conference itself, but a lot of the, I would say more of the pure analytics-y type people definitely do go to the conference, I think.
Like whom?
So the non, I mean, people that are maybe sports betting adjacent, but, or not even sports betting at all.
That's like when people say that people are CBIL adjacent. Conference.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you ask Mike Craig at all about the Raz stuff? I didn't really, I saw Mike briefly. I didn't have a chance to talk to him.
Yeah, I talked to him briefly about it.
What was his take? Any interesting take or just running cold or anything like that?
No, it's interesting. I mean, I think he has a good perspective on it. And I think, you know, it's Ed's had this company for a long time and I think takes things quite, I think we all know that he can take things a little bit personally. And Mike basically, I mean, I don't want to breach any confidence. If he trusted me to not say anything. But I think that they're clearly working really hard and it's been a frustrating year, but that's basically all I'll say. Well, yeah.
Good talk. So I had an interesting Sloan. Thanks for asking, Rufus. I'm doing this golf project, which I'll probably talk about more at some point, but I was trying to insert myself into the golf world. So I managed to go to dinner with three of the panelists from the golf panel. One was including Chris Solomon, who is Solly from No Laying Up, which was pretty fun. It was interesting to get his take. Fascinating. You don't listen to podcasts, but it's fascinating how much access he has now. Like he had a podcast with Rory McIlroy for an hour where he just came on and talked about Succession. Like, you know, and he has all these guests on, and when the PGA Tour wanted to sort of be exclusive about like reporting what happened in that players only meeting, they went to him to give him the exclusive on reporting what happened. So it's pretty incredible just hearing the origin story. He was like an accountant in Amsterdam when he started doing this. Like he wasn't any, and it, he just started doing it because he could like watch golf and then, you know, follow golf at these odd hours and then podcast after the fact. And so pretty interesting. Although he might have stolen our idea, which was this idea that we had of doing this contest with you, me, and Tom, where we drafted 8 golfers. And it was basically, if your golfer wins a major in the next 5 years, the other 2 have to pay you $500 immediately after the tournament. So there's no like
for each major. Over
for each major, right? And so we did this draft, and I encourage you guys out there who are golf fans to do this because it's pretty fun. We did it like off the top of our heads, basically at a dinner, I don't know, three or four bottles of wine in, and ended up
three or four bottles of wine. Do we even order a bottle
that night?
I think we ordered it.
We did want order a bottle, but we had some drinks beforehand for sure. Like right. we weren't, I don't think any of us were completely sober, right? There was definitely a level of inebriation as we did this draft.
I think we started this draft on our first drink of the night, Jeff, but
I don't think so.
I think you're trying to excuse your bad draft.
You think I had a bad draft?
Well, the internet did.
What's that?
The internet did.
Some of the internet did. Some of the internet didn't. I mean, do we want to go over it quickly? Because it was pretty entertaining. And now that we're in golf season, it seems like something we should talk about.
I think did we go over it in an earlier podcast? No.
I don't think so. I think we went over it. We went over it with each other. I don't think we've really talked about it on a podcast. If we have, we apologize to all 7 of you guys, as we should for pretty much every episode we ever do. Are you pulling it up, Rufus?
Yeah, I can do that. There was someone on Twitter actually posted the teams, which kind of was a better way of actually seeing, like, I don't know, the output of the draft rather than just the list that I have of Tom, Scheffler, Jeff, Rahm, Rufus, Aubert, right?
Right. Yeah, that's probably a better way. I think I did that anyways. Let's see here.
I think Jeff just had a team of a lot of kind of has-beens and guys that don't, in my opinion, have quite as much upside. I mean,
you think Rahm's a has-been?
I think Rahm is the clear guy to take if you have the second pick.
You think Xander's a has-been?
Xander's somebody that doesn't know how to. If Xander wins the tournament, he's going to do it coming from behind without a lot of pressure on him. I mean, maybe he will be able to overcome that, but he has won a few golf tournaments clearly, but I don't know. I still don't put him in that Rory category in terms of like guys that should have won a lot more, but he's not as young as he, I mean, how old is he? He's 30 already. Okay. I mean, think about who's winning these majors. It's golf has shifted younger and younger. And so
what's the like 27 age in baseball analogy in golf?
27. I would say like,
do you know what 30, I mean? Like but back 30. In the day, everyone said 27 was the year people peaked in baseball. We used to talk, I know that's probably not the number it is right now, but what do you think 30 is what it is in golf?
Said like 32, maybe. I think it's less of a physical game, although it's becoming more and more of a physical game than it used to be. I think we're seeing that with longer hitters, but I think golfers can have a much longer prime than people in other sports, but there is a point where things fall off, and I do wonder how much of the aging stuff is like kind of life stuff as well, and work ethic and drive. So once you have a family and kids, you don't have time to practice as much. And you saw what happened to Ricky Fowler after he got married, right? I mean, I think you kind of see that sometimes for some golfers, not for all golfers. So
what do you think
that can grind and stay good till, I mean, their late 40s and stuff like that. I mean, think of like the Lucas Glovers of the world, or like Charles Howell. He's someone that's been known for his work ethic for years, and he's kind of, I mean, he's on live now, but he's maintained a pretty solid level of play over a long period of time. So I don't know. I think it's interesting to think about where the sort of aging decay comes from.
What do you think the ideal age would have been to, because essentially what you're balancing is how much you actually know about this person being good versus like the upside. Right. And so like,
right. And Jeff, if we were doing earnings over that span, I think it would be a little bit different.
Yes, absolutely. So earnings, do you think that my team would be a better team than it is for the Masters?
I mean, probably.
And earnings, would you skew to...
Although earnings, then you want all the live guys.
Yeah, like, well, you skew toward live. But you wouldn't include, like, guaranteed... I don't actually know how their salary structures work. The money that they sign for, is that guaranteed? And is that guaranteed against what they win?
We don't know exactly. Apparently, it varies based on the player. Some of the contracts are different than others. But I want to go through your squad real quick, Jeff, one by one.
Did you want to just shit on me?
A little bit.
It's very
you took Rahm. That's pretty self-explanatory. That's a good pick. I mean, that is the only pick with the number two pick after Scheffler's gone. Next time around, you take Schauffele. Again, I think that's a solid pick, but I guess you could have also taken the other Rory or Morikawa. That's who Tom took. I think there's arguments for all those three. Next time around, you took Sam Burns. I don't love that pick. Burns is a good player. I just don't think he's super elite. He's a very good putter, good driver of the ball. But I mean, how old is he now?
He's 27.
27. Okay. How many PGA Tour wins does he have? He's 18th in the world rankings. He's good, but I just don't see him being a top 10 golfer at any point or having that potential. I mean, or sustained at least. After that, you took Matthew Fitzpatrick. Now, he's someone who I'm pretty sure will keep working hard, right? That's his whole thing. But if he doesn't, he's, I don't know. Like, he seems like someone who's definitely maximizing his talent already. I don't think he has a lot of room for growth. That's kind of what I would say there. He's 29 years old. Next pick after Tom Kim. Tom Kim just doesn't really have the firepower in terms of length off the tee. He had that terrific start to his PGA Tour career and has been a good golfer since then, but I just don't see that much upside. Koepka, I don't hate the Koepka pick. I mean, I could shit on it and say it's the worst pick ever just because of his age and his injury tendencies. But if he doesn't get injured, right, like if somehow his body does hold up, then that's a great pick. And then Wyndham Clark, that's actually not a bad pick. I think he's a little bit older, but at the same time, he's got a great pedigree, and he was a top amateur, and he's kind of just taken a while to find his footing on the PGA Tour. And so, I mean, I think it's better than like Tommy Fleetwood pick after.
The Cantlay pick was a bad pick, I would guess, in your mind.
Oh, I forgot it.
Because he's 31 and nobody likes him, and they say his nickname's Patty Ice.
Yeah. So, plus you have to root for him now.
I know. I don't want to root for him. I don't want to root for him.
Right. I mean, I would generally say you want people in their 20s almost.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, again, we did this off the cuff, right? And I hope that you had a better draft than me because you're the best golf sports better in the world. So if you didn't have a better draft than me, I would think that would be bad.
I had a few bad picks. I think when I went with JT and Homa, I think those were bad. I think I was just thinking of like.
Yeah. I mean, I think
those are guys that I also generally don't, especially Homa, don't really bet on and tend to be more against. And so I kind of was
being contrarian to your own ratings.
I totally was there. I totally was.
Well, so I think it would be interesting if we did this all over again, like how different the draft would be, you know. Well, and
like having been able to have done some research and taken
even think it out, right? Like I think even just in this conversation, my thought process on the age of someone I drafted, you know, like Burns is a guy that I drafted because he was on the younger side, right?
Yeah, and I mean, like 27 isn't bad. Like 27, to, you get him for ages 27 to 32. That's
sweet spot, right? And then and then Tom Kim was a guy I drafted because he was very young, and so maybe there is some, you know, maybe he can get some firepower. Like that's adding length is something that people have been able to do in golf over the last few years, right? There are systems and training that allow you to do that. Our friend Kyle Bodie can do that in baseball, so maybe people can do that in golf. Like Fitzpatrick did that in golf, right? Yes. That was one of the reasons that he became a better golfer. So, and you, I mean, you took Bryson with the idea that he would work and reinvent himself, and that was kind of one of your, you know, reasons of doing that.
Late round, yeah, he was my number 7 pick, and he's still fairly young, but he seems like someone who's going to have the work ethic.
I mean, I think Oberg, right, is this one that everyone loves, right? But is there a world where he never does anything? He just flames out. Like he's young and unknown and who knows, right?
I mean,
like
I don't think he's Norman Jeong, but
I don't know who Norman Jeong is. Maybe
he was a top amateur who's actually now playing. I think he's in the Puerto Rico Open this year. He's kind of finally regained some status, but he kind of famously sort of flamed out and didn't have for a year, so didn't have any status on any tour. I mean, he kind of just dropped off the face of the earth. I think Gobert was definitely kind of a contrarian pick there, but I mean,
yeah, I don't think it was contrarian.
Him over like Rory or Schauffele or Morikawa. I mean, I feel like,
but no, I don't consider that contrarian. I consider that buzzy. You know, like when you go into a fantasy draft and there's that one guy that's super buzzy that everyone's like, I want, especially in keeper leagues, they're like, oh, I want that guy, because it's like, that's what Oberg was. He's that buzzy guy that you might have. I think that you probably overdrafted him, but he would have gotten drafted. I probably would have taken him next, and Tom would have taken, you know what I mean? Like,
I'll tell you the best pick of the draft, which we all forgot about him, was Will Zalatoris, who I
Willie
got.
Willie Z, yeah.
I don't know how I got him so
late.
Are
his injury concerns, like, are they ongoing? Or are they?
I mean, because he's had to change his swing.
Yeah. So, I mean, that is why he dropped, right? There's injury concerns.
So poorly in his first few events back too. So he kind of, if you're looking at the top players, he's kind of just not on the radar right now.
Interesting. Hello's love him.
Other guys nobody took, like nobody took DJ. I think age there probably. DJ's in his late 30s. Maybe he's almost 40 now. Maybe he's 40 by now. Nobody took Tiger. No surprise there. Nobody took Sung J.M. either. That's
who's the highest OWGR or the highest data golf person that wasn't picked?
Let's look at OWGR first. Although that's only, I mean, again,
why don't we look at data? Isn't data golf a better way to look at it potentially?
Yeah, I mean, because OWGR, or we can look at my ratings too.
Who's the your best in your rating and that wasn't picked? I'd rather look at that. Fuck data golf.
Well, I think they won't be that far off, but I think both data golf and I aren't rewarding like wins the amount.
By the way, we've lost anyone in this podcast that is not a golf nerd at this point. This is like super golf nerd shit.
It's funny. So I'm making fun of the Fleetwood pick, but like Fleetwood is a top 10 golfer right now, according to my numbers. Oh, you know who nobody took? Oh, I don't think, did anybody take Neiman?
Joko? No one took Joko.
Joaquin, like right now I have him as a top 10 golfer.
There you go. And he's getting to play in the Masters, so.
And Burns is right below him. So I'm higher on Burns than OWGR is. Nobody took
so Hatton. Funny. Nobody shot took on everyone's Hatton. Picks. And how old's Hatton, though?
He's not that old. I think he's young 30s, late 20s. I'm going to go guess around 30, and then I'm going to look it up.
He's 32.
32, okay.
Yeah.
Someone did take Spieth, right?
Yes.
Spieth was taken by Tom.
Tom did.
Nobody took Russell Henley, which I think that's totally justified. Nobody took Matsuyama.
He's the age and injury risk, right?
He's not that old. He's young 30 still, right?
Are you sure? Are you sure it's not just because he's Asian and he ages well? 32.
Fair point. Nobody took Taylor.
Some of these images, he looks so much like me. It's scary.
Taylor Gooch, who was like the Live Player of the Year last year.
Yeah, nobody, he's never going to be allowed to play again.
Yeah, I think they will. Nobody took, let's see, Shane Lowry, Corey Connors, Jason Day, Oosthuizen, Keegan Bradley, Adam Scott. These are, yeah, Eric Hall. There's nobody I'm seeing down here like I feel like people should have taken. I want to find like a young guy that's who's a young guy that we didn't take that isn't really highly ranked but has the potential. I would say Nikolai Højgaard there, or his brother Rasmus. They're basically the same player in terms of how good they are right now.
Do you think any of those amateurs should have been taken
the same way? Kind of. They're both long off the tee and not accurate off the tee. Like, I'm literally looking at their stats here. Rasmus is the better putter.
Okay. Let's move on, Rufus. We're literally just listening to you read through a spreadsheet. It's not great content. Okay, let's move on. So the rest of my Sloan thing, did you hear about this chess boxing thing?
I did not.
Do you know what a chess boxing is?
I do not.
You know, like biathlon where you like ski and shoot?
Which is objectively the most cool sport ever because it's actually has real life implications.
Well, chess boxing is
back
like
day,
chess.
You had to like hunt bears and stuff or whatever you're hunting, not bears.
Chess boxing is you play chess and then box. It's exactly what it sounds like. It's literally like a modern biathlon where you do both of those things. And they had a demo of it. This is like a real sport with like a world champion and everything like that. You play chess and then you go box for 3 minutes and then you play speed chess for 3 minutes. And there's like a structure to it. And they did a whole demo of it with like real boxing and the whole deal. It was very interesting. And I talked to Ted Knutson, who said he's been watching chess boxing for like 10 years because he loves combat sports. Yes.
I didn't know Ted loved combat sports.
That's what he told me. Isn't that crazy? You don't find this interesting at all.
I do find it interesting.
Chess boxing. It's a wild mix of two of mankind's oldest sporting obsession. Opponents battle on the board and then slug it out in the ring, alternating between rounds of chess and boxing until there is a winner by checkmate or KO. Come on, that sounds amazing, doesn't it?
Yeah, I feel like the game theory of it's kind of interesting too. Right?
Like in terms of...
Like, do you try to, if you're like, I know I'm at a disadvantage boxing, am I just trying to, like, do I need to go for the quick checkmate? Or like, I mean, it, in terms of like what your chess strategy would be, right? Like, do you take a high risk strategy if you don't think you can last in the boxing, or if you think you're the better boxer, do you just try to stall the game? Like, what's more likely to happen first? Like,
yeah,
which becomes,
I was not able to think through any of these strategies. I was just mesmerized at watching it happen and watching like they did like their heart rates when they were trying to play chess, and like the people were trying to get their heart rates down so they could focus on chess, and then they'd have to go and do the thing and their heart rates would get way up, and it was pretty fascinating. So I did two panels, Rufus. The first one was interesting because I kind of learned that I kind of confirmed what I knew, which was that generally people from the sportsbook operators do not like me moderating sports betting panels. I guess that's shouldn't have been a new concept to me, but we did one with Maddie Want. I don't know if you met her at the dinner, but she's awesome, super smart, runs like the data science thing at Fanatics.
Yeah,
and then Grant from Prize Picks, and
she was sitting two seats from me. We chatted.
Yeah, she's pretty impressive, right?
Very.
Yeah. But she's written a book called Precisely. I'll shout out to her book. So maybe she'll get some book sales from our 7 listeners. But anyway, so we were talking about on that panel a little bit of like, you know, it's essentially like a Prize Picks. And I don't want to get into too much of the inside baseball, but, you know, there's obviously controversy with Prize Picks where people say they're sort of operating like these parlays that aren't a game of skill. Their take is that these are all a game of skill, that sports betting is a game of skill. And so we're not going to get totally into that. But one of the things I found interesting is there was this sort of juxtaposition of how do you use data sort of like raise like lifetime value of a customer or to like get a customer drawn in, and even the word habituation was used, but then how do you use data to understand and prevent problem gambling? So if on the one hand, you're trying to drive habituation and on the other hand, you're trying to get away from problem gambling. I mean, this is the conundrum that any business that is like a vice at some level faces, right?
Are you really trying to get rid of the problem gamblers? Like, operators say they are.
I don't know. I think you have to
best customers
have some. What's that?
The problem of incentives. Those are your best customers. The problem gamblers are your best customers. Why would you voluntarily, except for? I mean, if you're a profit, if you're trying to deliver shareholder value, then you almost have an obligation to go after the problem gamblers.
Yeah, my younger self would have made a really comment on
situation,
this.
I think, and that's why I have huge issues with this industry. But I think you and I agree on this. Problem. It is a huge incentive problem.
Yeah, I do think that there was a shout out to Prize Picks who pushed to have me moderate this panel because they wanted me to do it. But also, I didn't feel as maverick as I normally do on a panel. And I don't know if that just means like I'm getting neutered as a human or what, but like it was a tough look for me, knowing that like I couldn't ask the questions I really wanted to ask at some level because I didn't want to. I don't know. It was an interesting moment for me in my life.
it was certainly not the Maddie Holt Haralabob panel, which I rewatched in the last month. That was from 2013, 2012.
How did it age? Did it age like Entourage ages? Because Entourage ages really well.
It aged pretty well. I think so. But I want to know.
We should rewatch. I mean, like there should be like, we should do a rewatch party of that panel. It was so good.
I want to know what you would have asked in the Prize Picks. Yeah.
You didn't watch the Prize Picks panel, did you?
I didn't watch any Sloan panels. Remember, I was not actually at the conference.
No, but you could have watched it on YouTube live. I mean, I know you have better things to do with your life, but you could have watched your podcast partner and supported me.
On a Saturday.
What would I have asked? I mean, I probably would have asked that question that you asked about problem betting and like kind of delved more into that. We talked about it for a while. Like the contradiction of the word habituation with problem gambling. And I think, like, you know, in Maddie's defense, I think she's looking at this very clinically, right? Like that's her job is to look at this, and it's like a science experiment versus like where you and I have a lot of knowledge of the dark side of this business. And, you know, we had Keith White on and, you know, it's something that I think is near and dear to our hearts that we want to try to see how do we prevent this. I probably would have really like gone into this idea of what Prize Picks is doing versus, but I think the stance that I took on a lot of this is, if you have like a DraftKings and a FanDuel that were formerly legal because of DFS Game of Skill, and all of a sudden now they become regulated and they want to go back and say that these DFS guys are not doing a Game of Skill and shouldn't be able to operate, and that's their righteous way.
Are they saying it's not a Game of Skill, or are they saying it's sports betting?
What's the difference? The whole point behind the reason why sports betting is
well, one you need a license for and one you don't. That's the difference.
Well, DFS is carved out because it's considered a game of skill, right?
Parlays are something you do at a sports book, though. Those are considered sports betting rather than daily fantasy sports, right? If I wanted to parlay,
but I don't,
the New York Knicks.
We should have someone on. We should have someone on that knows the legal distinction on this. My impression is that the reason that sports betting is not considered a game of skill, it's considered a game of luck, right? Where they've made the odds to the. I'm just telling you legally why it. I think this is the. Okay.
Wait, if I wanted to say. So the thing stopping me from building a site and that just has same game parlays or that takes bets on teams against a point spread, like the thing that's stopping me is that that's not a game of skill or that it's sports betting and I need a license to do it.
I think it's considered sports betting because it's not a game of skill. And sports betting is a classification that needs to be regulated. So I think we can both be right on this. because I think you're probably right. The reason you need a license is because it's classified as sports betting, so you can get a sports betting license, right? If it was a different kind of game of luck and chance, you'd have to have another license for it. But like playing poker against someone is, or well, I don't know if poker is predominantly skill or not, but like if you and I play tennis against each other, right, and we bet on that, that's not illegal, right? Because it's definitely a game of skill. This is this whole like skill gaming thing. Like companies have been started to facilitate skill gaming across the internet, like skilled, like chess against each other. You can do that and do it for money, and it's legal.
Okay. I'm not a lawyer.
No. This I'm sure about. Like this has been like, if you look at it, there's been companies started to facilitate games of skill between random people and allow them to bet on it.
Okay, but so, can we back to the point though of the problem gambling and the incentives.
Yes. No, I mean, I think that's that you asked me what questions I would ask. I would probably have been more pedantic on continuing to ask that question. Are you really looking for problem gambling? How can you talk about things like habituation and yet say that you're stopping problem gambling? And I kind of know what the answer would be, but again, like it would have been interesting to push on that more.
I mean, the problem with all these things is that these companies, right, they are, if they want to succeed, they're incentivized to do something that is not going to be great for society overall, in that one area at least. And so you're going to hear a lot of like non-answers and political answers and corporate doublespeak and all that. But I want to know what your opinion, Jeff, is on, I don't know if you saw this, but Underdog. Are they Underdog?
Watch the sports book?
Yes, but also they started a fund to invest in startups that are in the sort of responsible gambling sector that are trying to enhance responsible gambling. And so they invested in their first one this week. I think it was announced 2 days ago. I'm going to find the tweet and read it to you. So they announced an investment in a company called ID Pair. It says ID Pair aims to provide a centralized view of an individual's play across operators, providing for universal RG, responsible gambling, I don't know, limits. We started Guard Dog to help advance responsibility across the entire gaming ecosystem, and ID Pair is doing just that. So I think this is interesting because you have people that are, A, there's people that think it's just optics, and B, there's people that think, oh, this is not going to actually be used for responsible gambling. This is going to be used to help limit people across different sports books. So I don't know. I know nothing about this. I'm curious your thoughts.
I think it's probably a little bit of both. I think they did this for optics standpoint. It's a pretty easy thing to do. And honestly, starting like a corporate venture where you're putting some money into companies that are going to innovate. I mean, this is a hard thing because you don't like no great, very few great companies are started with the idea of being not making money, right? And so at some point you got to make money. And how do you make money in this business? It's through the operators. And ultimately the operators make money from people gambling and losing. Again, this is like the problem with this space that just makes it such that I never would really want to like start a company or work in it, which is that nobody wins. Nobody makes money unless people lose. And so ultimately that's a tough look and a tough thing to be. And so it's honestly not that interesting to me, just because I feel like, you know, the concept of, you know, like companies starting corporate venture is not super interesting to me, because it's like they're just spraying around a little bit of money, and if you're a really good company, you're just building stuff yourself. And then, you know, if it is to try to figure out ways to limit people, I mean, the limiting thing
I wouldn't guess that's something that even if the sports book's good at it, like they wouldn't want to share that, because that's their proprietary. They wouldn't want to share information with competitors that gives the competitor, puts them on an equal footing, right?
Yeah.
Although if Underdog thinks that, since they're just getting into this, so they think that, you know, they're behind on that particular part of the job, so to speak, right? Like being able to identify and limit winning bettors, then in essence, investing in something that will put everybody in a level playing field actually helps them out. So
yeah,
again, I don't think that's it. I think if you can differentiate yourself as a company in that regard, if everybody else seems to be the greedy people that are taking advantage of problem gamblers and you seem to be actually interested in that, then that's a great look. If you can make that kind of your plan. Should we get some questions or not?
Yeah, let's do a couple questions, but I just closing the loop on Sloan. I did the poker panel again, which was like great and painful. It was great because it was fun to be around great people, but also like it was basically almost the exact same panelists. And so like, how do you actually start to create new content in this? And one thing I tried to ask was like, hey, what's changed in the last year? One thing that like Sunny Mehta said to me is he came up and he told me like, yeah, he said like one thing he liked that I said is this GTO stuff is like basically efficient market theory. You know, these worlds where we believe that everyone, like markets are efficient or people behave rationally, like it's just not true. So anyways, okay, let's move on. Let's move on to questions.
You get
to pick. Why don't you pick two? Well, we have probably time for like four questions. So why don't you pick
some
two?
Some of them can be rapid fire ones too. You're about to graduate high school in 2024. This is from Steve at Banff, or is it someone I know personally, Alaska Steve. You're about to graduate high school in 2024 and want to do what you guys do. Would you take a college university path today? If so, where? If not, where? What would be your plan? I still would take a college university path just because I at that time in my life, I wasn't thinking that much outside the box and I had no idea what I wanted to do. So
what about you, Jeff? What was the biggest thing? What was the biggest benefit that you got from going to, where did you go? Like Central Connecticut?
It's a small liberal arts college in the coast of Connecticut.
Con college for women. Exactly. What did you learn? What was the biggest thing you learned, or what was the biggest benefit? Sorry.
I learned how to work hard. I met a lot of really smart people. I think that's a big thing. I was surrounded by a lot of smart people and I learned from their way of thinking. I don't think I ever lived with a roommate who was dumber than me. So I feel like I was learning from the people as well as the classes. And I learned a way of thinking for sure. And obviously like the network is, you know, I know that there's value to a Yale degree, but I would not have actually gotten, it turns out I would not have gotten that internship with Las Vegas Sports Consultants if I didn't have Yale on my resume. Kenny later told me, he said he saw Yale. He said that other people had asked, but he saw Yale and was like, oh, we'll go with this guy. So, I mean, that's not something that's like a signaling device more than anything, clearly. But I still think, you know, the classes I took, like economics, for example, I was an economics major. I don't do traditional economics things, but I learned a way of thinking that has really applied to what I'm doing now.
You're not going to ask me the same question? It's a great question. I think there's two things. One, I was like thinking about it as you were saying your answer, so I wasn't really listening to your answer, so I don't even know what you said. But the one is the brand name for me, that obviously the MIT thing is like completely opened a lot of doors, and it makes people think you're a lot smarter than you actually are, which is great for me. But I do think one of the things that I learned there, and this is going to probably shock people, is leadership. I learned leadership there because I think coming out of like the environment I came out in high school, where I was, you know, from this sort of prep school where all the kids were cooler, richer, whatever, more put together than me, going to a place like MIT where that wasn't the case. They were more nerdy, smarter, whatever, but I was probably cooler than they were to some degree. Like I learned to be kind of a leader more than them. It's not a high bar, Rufus. It's not a high bar. You're looking at me smirkingly. It's not like I'm saying much about me. I'm saying much more about the people I went to school with. But I also, like, you know, I was captain of the water polo team. I was president of my fraternity. There were just a lot of things that like I learned from a leadership perspective there. So
it's interesting. You had kind of I really like your answer, but it's interesting that your high school experience and mine probably could not have been more different, where I went to a big public high school and was, you know, one of the top people in terms academically. And then I go to Yale where I feel like an idiot.
Okay. I got the next question, and I'm asking this one, not because I want the answer to this, but also I think it spurs an interesting conversation. Who is betting the NBA first half totals that are moving 5 points? So I've heard someone else say this to me, like a couple people have DM'd me and I have no idea, but like, do you find that in your life in areas like golf or let's say now college basketball or college football back in the day, that you would have a beat on like who the big groups were that were like moving stuff. Like I remember I talked to Bud Elliott over the college football season and we were talking about something else. And he said to me, like, do you know who this group, he was asking about some group. And I was like, I don't know. But like, do you feel like, you know, a lot of the groups that are moving things, that are moving lines?
We know some people. I mean, I think I know some people in golf as well as college basketball, or not me, but we are our syndicate. But again, like, that's, personally, I have no idea who's moving the NBA stuff.
Yeah, no, I knew you wouldn't know
still,
that. But
I think we still only know, like, that's a good question, because it's like, how, I don't know how much I don't know about that. If that makes sense.
And it seems like there are new groups now that didn't used to exist, right? Like there are, it's like in the last few years that like new groups or spurts, like, are.
I mean, that's always, right? But right. I do think now with the way the ecosystem has developed, and I'm going to endorse the Risk of Ruin podcast this week called Movers. I thought it was a fantastic episode, but with people using movers to get down and stuff like that, I think sometimes it's almost easier in a way, because you have a lot of people going through sort of a handful of big movers. And so you can kind of, I think from movers have a little more information, especially on that stuff.
Okay. Let's give, just because you mentioned him, let's give John Reeder a shout out at Risk of Ruin podcast at Half Kelly. He asked, can you talk about the tech stack you use from start to finish and can leave out anything sensitive like actual sources of data? Thanks. I'll hang up and listen.
So it varies based on sport. And Taylor's really helped us upgrade on that front. I had written a lot of stuff in like back in the day in Perl and not written very well either. And then I use, believe it or not, I still use Stata for a lot of stuff. And so it's a statistical data analysis software with its own programming language. So we have basically, I think, stuff in Python and one of the C languages, and then in Stata on the sort of the back end. And then we have front end interfaces for displaying stuff, and productionizing it that allows like trading interfaces that we build. And so I don't know. Jeff, do you think I'm answering that correctly?
Sounds good, but it's not, I don't think it's as exciting an answer as he was hoping for. Okay, last question.
There's a clear like system of this data comes in here, it goes through this process, goes in this program, and then this program, and it comes out here. We pull market data here, it integrates. Yeah. May be different languages and stuff like that, but I think it's fundamental to what we do.
Has Rufus ever considered betting soccer? If not, why? The likes of Matthew Benham and Tony Bloom have made fortunes in these markets, especially essentially the pinnacle of pro gambling. And that's from WW Bets.
Not smart enough for that.
To bet soccer?
It's a very big, very efficient market. And I don't think I could do that and keep doing the other stuff I'm doing. I feel like if I wanted to and I've looked into this. In fact, we had a company that was trying to build some soccer stuff, but I think it would need to be like to succeed at it, I would need to like make it my entire life. And I don't know if I would succeed at it.
Yeah.
I'd probably need a bigger operation.
Interesting.
More people. I'd need to be able to delegate.
Do you think soccer is more efficient than NFL football?
I think so. I mean, I think the big soccer leagues probably are. But
is there more?
I don't know. I don't actually know the answer to that. There's more games.
It's a good question. You want to answer any of the other ones? Cherny's question.
The state of analytics in soccer it's improving in recent years big time, thanks to guys like Ted Knudsen. But it's
Well, then also the people at our dinner, we had soccer brain trust.
I think it's behind NFL football, in my opinion. I mean, not the team's decision-making stuff necessarily, but yeah. Sorry, what was the next question?
That's all I had. I don't know if you want to answer any other ones, but I think that's a reasonable place to stop.
Well, we have a question from Adam Chernoff.
I know, but you've never played Bandon. You've never played Bandon, and I've never played Cabot. So it's like it's an impossible question. There's probably a really good golf course question out there. That one's probably not the one at this point, but for us, because neither of us has played both. So
between
and
us,
I think you need to introduce some scarcity in there, right? It can't be like you get to play 10 rounds. It's like you get to play like 3 rounds or something like that.
That's a good point.
He has good pipes, but he's not good at answering and asking questions. Just kidding, Journey. So anyways, okay. Well, that was our podcast. We'll be back next week. Hopefully we'll do something a little different next week, but enjoyed catching up with you, Rufus, and we'll talk to you guys all again next week. Crunching all the numbers in a simulated system that break down the data, analytically driven. Media coverage of sports gambling is pathetic. The bottom line is watered down. It seems like they don't get it. Puppeteers are but the engines running off unleaded. None of it's organic. It all sounds synthetic. That's why I fucks with Jeff Ma and his dog Rufus. No locks of the year. They just tell you what their truth is. Maybe make your pockets fatter as the bookies get thinner. Give the information, turn the losing bettors into winners. Yeah, Sturm Hahn, reppin' Rutgers, Jeff Ma, Rufus Peabody, crunching all the numbers, Massey Peabody rankings, we're looking for the edge, analytically driven, crunching all the numbers.